What do natural disasters tell us about the God we serve? Hello, I'm Alden Thompson, your host today on Good Word, and we continue our discussions of the minor prophets. Today we're going to be talking about Joel, and my conversation partners again are Dave Thomas and John Dibdall, both of them with strong ties to the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Now let me come to that question. Joel is talking. There's no date in his book, but it seems to be the case that he's talking about the situation in Judah as it's moving down towards the destruction of Jerusalem and the exile beginning in 586. So he is quite concerned here about human behavior. But I'd like to see some response from you men on the question of natural disasters as they are used by God, as they are described by God in the prophets. What do they tell us about the God we serve?
That's a tough question. We have so many people today see natural disasters and speak various ways they apply it to some kind of act of God, such as I've heard some preachers say 9/11, you know, was a judgment of God on America for its sins. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would not accept that definition, and so it becomes very problematic what to say about it. Mm-hmm. I do not know what to say, but certainly in the Bible you have prophets giving some kind of explanation for why it took place.
But you know, I think that the doctrine of creation would allow room to suggest that not every natural disaster is even connected to God, that there are natural processes that are part of the planet and its function, and that the fact that there was an earthquake or something doesn't have to be necessarily attributed to an act of God.
That's saying that not everything applies in this case.
Yeah.
Some things may, but some things may not.
How do you protect yourself then from a deistic position where God just steps back and it just happens?
Well, I didn't hear Dave say that this happens all the time, that it's true all the time. He left room for...
It seems to me that if a natural disaster is an act of God and intending to teach something, there will be somebody to explain that.
Mm-hmm. That's what the prophets were doing.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, this one here in Joel is very interesting. If you've ever seen a locust plague come, it's terrifying. Because,
you know, did you see those in Africa?
I've seen one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the sky starts to look funny at a distance, and then it looks like a big cloud is coming. And the next thing you see is grasshoppers going by you. And they just get more and more and more abundant until finally they just cover the ground. And they absolutely destroy everything. You know, they'll be there for 3 or 4 days. You can hardly walk anywhere because you step on grasshoppers. And when they're gone, everything is bare. And so if you're tied to an agrarian economy, that's a whole year cycle. Or at least a 6-month cycle where everything you have is gone. And they don't do you any harm themselves. I mean, those grasshoppers don't do you any harm.
They don't bite people.
No. You know, if you pick one up, you'll get kicked and they have spines that can hurt you. But some grasshoppers are edible, I understand. I never ate one. But, you know, the ones I've seen in Africa are huge. You know, they're 5-6 inches long. Mm. And they hit you in the head. I mean... You'll run for home if you're out in a grasshopper plague.
Some places in Asia, they're on sale in the market every day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So a fairly localized attack may be the source of income for people as they collect them. But they don't usually happen, at least the biblical ones I've seen and the one you've talked about don't happen in a small place. They're too
The one I saw was, and the plague I saw was not a huge one. Some of them, at least in Africa, they go for miles. Well, and I mean, when I read this, I get this picture. This would strike terror into the heart of somebody who's in a place where locusts actually come around.
Well, I think it becomes almost paradigmatic of destruction and horror and things, because certainly Revelation in the New Testament picks up a lot of the imagery of Joel, because that plague is such a model for other things that can happen that it becomes important.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the intriguing thing I understand in the Hebrew language there are a whole host of words that are translated as locust. And there are at least four are translated struggle with a bit of that in chapter 1, verse 4. But what is intriguing is chapter 2. Blow the trumpet in Zion, sound the alarm on my holy hill. Let all who live in the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming.
Hmm.
It is close at hand. And now the description of the locust plague. A day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and blackness, like dawn spreading across the mountains. A large and mighty army comes, such as never was in ancient times, nor ever will be in ages to come. Before them fire devours, behind them a flame blazes, before them the land is like the Garden of Eden, behind them a desert waste. Nothing escapes them. They have the appearance of horses. They gallop across like cavalry, with a noise like that of chariots. They leap over the mountaintops, like a crackling fire consuming stubble, like a mighty army drawn up for battle. The sight of them, nations are in anguish. Every face turns pale. It's just a classic illustration of a locust attack.
Yeah.
And this is Day of the Lord.
Yeah.
So. Now, we could get tied up with that, and we'll have a chance to talk about the Day of the Lord later. But, Dave, you commented beforehand that there was a favorite passage for you in Joel that you found really very helpful. Which one is that?
That's chapter 2, verse 12.
Okay.
Because I think it when you read the prophets, it's easy to be captivated by the harsh hyperbolic language, but the intention of God in reacting is very clearly laid out in verse 12. Yet even now, declares the Lord, return to me with all your heart, with fasting, with weeping, and with mourning, and rend your hearts and not your garments. Return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love, and he relents over disaster.
And interestingly enough, that comes right after the description of the locust
plague. Yes, yes. In other words, you frighten the daylights out of you, but in order to remember, you know, there's an interesting thing about human beings, how, and this is one reason I like the prophets too, is that they teach you that when prosperity comes and you enjoy various blessings from God, it's very easy to get to the point where you then declare independence from God and say, well, I have all these things, I don't need God. And so what distress does is it strips away all those things, and suddenly you realize that you need God again. And I see that reflected here. The terror of the locust plague puts people beyond their resources or beyond their ability to control their circumstances, and they suddenly start looking for God, only to discover that he is gracious.
Right there. A wonderful insight. Yeah. Well, there's another aspect here which is alluded to several times, and we want to come to Joel chapter 2 because that's fairly crucial as far as the New Testament is concerned. But when you look at the day of the Lord, it is signified by dark day, sun, moon, and stars, those signs there. And in the 19th century, there was a strong movement among Protestants to look at particular events and see these as one-time events. For instance, the Lisbon earthquake in 1755, and then the dark day in 1780, and the falling of the stars in 1833. Yeah. But if you go back to the Old Testament, the day of the Lord is any day of judgment, and it always is indicated by these heavenly sights.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in one class I was teaching the book of Daniel, and I asked the students about the Lisbon earthquake. And I said, how many of your lives were shaped by the Lisbon earthquake? See, didn't get a single hand. And I said, which earthquake did? And they said, the San Francisco earthquake. And I said, where did you live? San Francisco. And the next year when I told that story in class, one of the girls had been there at Multnomah Falls when part of the mountain fell away.
Oh, yeah. Big 95-ton rock.
There was a wedding party down below, and all of a sudden, do you take this man? And splash. Nobody was seriously hurt. But you really remember that, see? And it's the currency. If you take signs as being something only in the past, it has no effect. And what the Bible writers will do is pick up those things and reapply them in current situations. Now, let's go to one that's very important in terms of the New Testament, and that is in Joel chapter 2, verse 28. Afterward, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams, and your young men will see visions, even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days. I will show wonders in the heavens on the earth, blood and fire and billows of smoke. Now, if I'm remembering correctly, that was applied by Peter in Acts 2. Wasn't that where he applied it?
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you stopped before you read, before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. That's the last part of that next verse.
Okay.
Whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved.
Well, in verse 31 is an intriguing one. The sun will be turned to darkness, the moon to blood, before the coming of the great day, dreadful day of the Lord.
Yeah.
And then whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved.
Yeah, that text is also important in the New Testament.
Yeah, very important. So. Yeah.
Well, I think what you have around the day of the Lord, which in some days, some places seems to be dark and other places it seems to be light, which is a coming of God in some kind of way, some kind of theophany.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are mentioned, the sun, the moon, the stars. These are things that for an agrarian people are the center of their universe, are the things that are steady, that are sure, that are happening. And what they're saying by using these are symbols that the very things that they're depending on are no longer dependable and only God can be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in the day of the Lord. Is that you realize the inability of any other thing to satisfy and give you a complete view of life. And so it can happen again. That can happen. That happened. That was seen as happening, I think, through the locusts. Seen as happening. When the Spirit came, the application of Peter in the New Testament is when the Spirit comes. And it applies, again, at the wrap-up of everything at the last day.
Yeah, you go to Revelation 6, you have these same heavenly signs
in
the sixth seal. So,
that's right. Okay. Saying the same thing. God is at work, and he's the only one that can be trusted.
Now, we're running out of time, but I want a pastoral application. Many people like to have precise prophecies that you can nail things down. Is there a weakness and is there a strength when we talk about these multiple applications like we have seen? Anybody like to volunteer a quick answer on
that? I think the weakness is that some people might think that they are not applicable, that they have no significance. The good side of it is that they have many. If the circumstances prevail, then they're applicable, and so they become timeless.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're constantly reminding people of what's going to happen. They're a constant reminder. They aren't a historical reminder only. They're a present reminder of things that are going on.
And that's why when we talk in the New Testament, especially the second coming of Christ, you can't make a chart. You have to be ready all the time because it could come at any time, and the signs simply remind you. But the ideal is to have these signs a reminder to those who need to be reminded, not something to scare the people who are already ready. Time is up. Thank you, John Dave, again, for helping us with our conversations. And next week, we will be turning to the prophet Amos. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.